everybody, and welcome back to Fueling Forward Friday. I'm your host, Maddie Alm, registered dietitian and former elite runner. Today's episode, I will be answering questions you all have submitted to me beforehand. And if you would like to submit any questions in the future, you can do so at my website, www.fuelingforward.com, under the podcast tab, or you can send me an email at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. Happy Friday. I hope everyone had a great week. Yesterday, out here in LA, we had a show filming on our street right outside our apartment, which was very exciting. Felt very LA. It's season two of the show High Potential. So I actually got to watch them film a scene outside with Caitlin Olson, which was really fun. So haven't seen the show, but now I'm definitely going to watch it. But yeah, that was really fun. That was kind of the highlight of my week. And then it is definitely starting to get pretty warm here. So I'm realizing for my marathon training, I'm going to have to get up pretty early. I am not a morning person. I feel like most runners I know get up at like 5 a.m. and get after it. And that has just never been me. I barely ever wake up before like 7 o'clock, if I'm being honest. It's just not who I am. But I'm going to try really hard to get up a little bit earlier to beat the heat, because that always zaps me for the day if I run in the heat. Never makes me feel very good. But just something I have to prepare for, because I'm realizing if I'm running a marathon in November, I'll be training in August, September, and October, which are the hottest months in LA. So yeah, it's gonna be a hot training block, but I'm here for it. I'm ready for it. Okay, just a quick Fueling Forward announcement before I start answering questions today. I will be hosting a fall marathon group coaching program that will be starting next month in July and will run through October. So if you are racing a fall marathon, this program is absolutely for you. It's going to be so much fun. It's going to be 12 weeks long. We're going to meet once a week for 45 minutes over Zoom. And we're just going to kind of progress from how to fuel with the basics during the beginning of a training block to how to start practicing with your fuel for race day. I'm going to have some guest speakers, like somebody who's raced a fall marathon and done really well before, hint, hint, a professional runner will be making a presence. And then a sports psych to give some tips on race day nerves and, you know, mental focus and things like that. There's going to be some options for discounted sports nutrition products and recommendations on how to use them. There'll be guides. There'll be a group page. It will also include blood work. So I'll have everyone who's in the program get blood work done before we meet. I'll put in the order for you. It'll be all included, so that'll be super easy. I think it's super important to check your labs before you start marathon training, just to make sure there's nothing we're missing. So it's going to be really, really fun. And then I think on top of that, my favorite part is that I'm also running a fall marathon. So I'm really excited just to kind of build a community with other runners. So this will end the week like right before Chicago Marathon. So if you're running a marathon between, you know, October and even December, this program would work really well for your timing. So if you're interested in that, applications open today on Friday, the 20th. So feel free to head over to my website under the group coaching programs tab and fill out an application. It is going to be limited to 10 athletes. I want it to be kind of a smaller group. So it will be first come, first serve basis. So if you're interested in that, head over and fill out an application. I would love to have you in my group. All right, let's go ahead and get into today's question. So this first question says, "Hi, Maddie. I've been a big fan of the podcast ever since I listened to the first episode. Thank you for everything you share. I have a question about REDS and the recovery process. I'm a runner averaging about 50 miles a week while also managing a demanding grad school schedule. A few weeks ago, I realized I wasn't fueling enough after getting hit with back-to-back flus and a bone stress injury. I also noticed I was constantly drained, even on rest days. Since increasing my food intake, I've actually felt more fatigued than before, as if my body is just now catching up on the rest and nutrition it's been missing. Is it normal to feel more exhausted during the early stages of recovery from underfueling? How long does this phase usually last? I'd love to hear more about what recovery can feel like physically and mentally after a period of underfueling." That question comes from Verinda. Verinda, thank you so much for submitting your question and asking that. I guess I want to start by saying that There are a lot of reasons why you may be feeling fatigued. Typically, when we are adding more fuel, when we're trying to recover from reds, I don't normally see people feel more fatigued right off the bat. I would say if I'm working with an athlete who is feeling fatigued, it's probably something else that's carrying over from that period of underfueling or related to life. So one thing I want to mention, you said that you are a grad student. You submitted this question back in May, which I'm assuming was kind of in the middle of like exams or thesis or finals or, you know, depending on what you were studying, probably a lot of things happening at the end of the semester. So I think it's important to think about, are there other reasons why I might be feeling tired? Am I experiencing a lot of life stress? Sleep, have I been getting enough sleep? Maybe my sleep has been worse because I've been more stressed with things going on in my life. That would also cause you to feel more tired. Has the weather changed? Is it hotter or more humid? Maybe that's a sign that we're dehydrated and need to focus more on hydration as well. So just the fueling piece alone, of course, is usually a big factor when it comes to energy. But if I hear that an athlete has been eating more and they're feeling more tired, my thought is that there's something else that's going on contributing to that fatigue. So typically, again, if I hear an athlete coming from a period of underfueling, I'll have them test iron. That's the other thing that came to my mind, was that maybe we have some low iron that's lingering from the period when you were underfueling. And especially when I hear things like you were getting sick a lot, you had bone stress injuries, you know, usually along with those things comes low iron. Iron plays a big role in your immune system. So a lot of times athletes who have low iron get sick more often, and that's obviously twofold. One is low iron, but then also the other underlying cause of low iron, which is usually underfueling. So if you are coming out of a period of reds or underfueling, I would encourage you to try to seek out getting some lab work done, especially checking in on your iron. So things I've talked about before, asking your doctor for a CBC panel for total iron and iron binding capacity, and also checking ferritin. Those are all things that you want to take a look at. You know, definitely a red flag if your ferritin is below 35. So something to keep in mind too. I, again, have mentioned this before. I've had doctors say things look great when ferritin is 12. But again, just remembering that this is not medical advice. This is something that you definitely want to talk with your doctor about if you're noticing kind of that chronic fatigue, just getting some blood work done to rule out any other potential cause. So that's the first thing I want to say with the fatigue. The other thing that I want to say is, you know, I know it's hard to sometimes acknowledge that, oh, maybe I was underfueling and that's part of the issue. So I really commend you for acknowledging like, hey, I think I could do this a little bit better and I want to start working on things. You mentioned that you're trying to kind of catch up on rest and nutrition, which can be an adjustment for sure. So I definitely want to just talk a little bit about some of the things I typically see athletes struggle with initially during that recovery period, maybe what to expect and how to push through it. So typically after an athlete is coming out of a period of underfueling, one of the biggest challenges is a suppressed appetite. This happens from underfueling. You know, your body kind of stops producing hunger hormones, or we have a harder time picking up on hunger cues. We also typically notice we feel full sooner, or we just struggle to eat larger volume of food, which can all happen due to underfueling. So the low appetite from low appetite hormones, and then the early, what we call early satiety, so feeling full soon, actually can happen because your stomach is a muscle. So just like any other muscle in your body, it can atrophy, it can shrink. Sometimes we have to go through a 2 to 3 week period where we kind of push through that and are a little bit uncomfortable. And then things kind of get back to normal. So your stomach sort of stretches back out essentially to a more normal volume. Your body starts producing those hunger hormones again and things get easier. But by far, for every athlete I work with who were recovering from underfueling, the hardest part is those first 2 to 3 weeks where we're just not feeling hungry. So if that's the case, if that's something that you're noticing, the first thing that you can do is try to get on a better fueling schedule. So something I've mentioned a few times is really trying to be intentional about eating every roughly 3 hours. So if you're not noticing hunger, physical hunger, what you can do is just set reminders on your phone to eat every 3 hours, Or let's say you sit down to eat breakfast at 9 o'clock, set a timer on your phone for 3 hours. And that way you'll be able to have a prompt that says, hey, it's been 3 hours. It's time to eat something else. If you are really struggling with hunger, something else that can be helpful is having smaller but more frequent meals. So instead of having like 3 really big meals and 2 smaller snacks, where maybe we're really struggling to finish all the food in those meals, we even out the quantity of food. So the total daily quantity of food is still the same, but what we're eating at each meal throughout the day is more consistent. So that way we're having, you know, 5 smaller meals, bigger snacks, rather than those 3 big meals that we struggle to eat and those 2 small snacks. So just something to kind of play around with too, just depending on what works well for you and your schedule, but maybe spacing things out. Liquids, as I've talked about before, can also be really helpful for getting extra fuel in with less resistance in terms of not feeling hungry. So like you can always drink a smoothie if you're really struggling to eat an afternoon snack. That could be a great way to get some extra calories, carbs, and protein in. Making swaps to higher calorie options of food. So instead of like a non-fat sugar-free yogurt, like the Triple Zero, Oikos Triple Zero, I will say is probably my least favorite Greek yogurt on the market, and almost every athlete I work with is eating it. There's a lot of things about it that I don't love, but definitely one is that there's no fat and there's no sugar, and there is a lot of artificial sweeteners in there that can really affect your gut health. So just getting a regular old whole fat Greek yogurt, either with a flavor or adding honey to it, that would be my suggestion too, is kind of switching to higher calorie options, like adding, instead of a couple pieces of avocado, a half of an avocado. Instead of 1 tablespoon of peanut butter, add another tablespoon, so you have 2 tablespoons. Those are things that don't take up extra space in your stomach, so it's easy to eat more. It doesn't feel like you're eating a ton more, but it is going to help contribute overall to that daily energy balance, so you can kind of dig yourself out of the hole. I think, you know, physically, people typically notice an improvement in energy fairly quickly and an improvement in sleep. So it's always really nice when you add in more fuel and you feel better. It's just sort of that reinforcement, okay, what I'm doing is the right thing. I'm going to kind of stay the course. And I know that, you know, for this person who wrote in, I know that it's difficult when that's not the case. And that's, again, why I'm thinking there might be something else happening, because typically people will see an improvement fairly soon with energy and with sleep. I would say something else to pay attention to if you're kind of coming out of a period of underfueling is if you're struggling with that relationship with food piece. From a mental standpoint, this is the other big challenge. Typically, when an athlete has been underfueling, even if it hasn't necessarily been super intentional, there is sort of this working in the back of your mind when you start eating more of like, oh my gosh, this feels like a lot of food. Am I doing this wrong? Is this too much food? Which is a normal thought pattern, especially if you're coming out of a period of underfueling. And I have said this before, and I will say it again. I have worked with over 400 athletes, and I have never, ever had a single athlete come to me eating enough carbs. Truly, not a single time. And even athletes who preface by saying, I eat a lot of carbs, they don't eat enough carbs. So I will say, just to put your mind at ease, chances are you're not overdoing it. It's going to feel like an increase in volume of food compared to what you were eating before, but it should be an increase in volume of food if you were underfueling. And again, I think that's where some of those like societal norms of like eating more is bad gets into our head, especially if we've grown up around diet culture or in a household where someone's been watching their weight or they make comments like, oh, you're going to eat all that. That really gets into our head. So I think just reminding yourself that my goal is to get out of a period of underfueling, which means I need to eat more. And just reminding yourself more is the goal. So it's going to be a little bit uncomfortable physically and mentally, but it is something that, you know, you do kind of have to push through. You can also start paying attention to other symptoms of hunger besides physical, that physical feeling of hunger in your stomach. So for some people, maybe they notice that they're getting a headache or they start to feel really tired or irritable. There might be other symptoms that your body is giving you that it needs food. And if we don't have that physical hunger, it's not always because we don't need to eat. Again, it can often be from that appetite suppression if we have been underfueling. So to anyone who is maybe struggling with underfueling recovery or REDS recovery, eating disorder recovery, my advice to you is just keep going, keep challenging yourself, take it one day at a time. Remind yourself that this is what your goal is. Your goal is to take care of your body. Your goal is to fuel adequately, and that requires more, and more is not bad. It just takes some time to undo that thought process, but I promise you, if you can stick with it, it always gets easier. Every single athlete I've worked with who, even if they've struggled for a couple of weeks, will tell me they turn a corner pretty suddenly when they're able to push through it and they really start to feel that physical difference. So hang in there, stick with it. You're doing great, and never be afraid to reach out for help or support if you're really struggling with understanding what your body needs, or if you're really struggling with symptoms like you're correcting your fueling and you still feel really bad, there could be something else going on that's worth digging into. So don't hesitate to reach out to a practitioner who specializes in sports performance and sports medicine. Dietitians, obviously, for example, would be someone that could be helpful. But yeah, that would be my advice. So thank you so much for that question, Vrinda. Okay, this question, I wanted to ask this question on air because I thought it was really fun. You know, obviously this is a nutrition podcast, but I'm also a former professional runner and someone who's been running for a really long time. So I love when people ask about running. That's something I love talking about and obviously a big part of also why we're here. So this question says, "Hi, I'm loving the podcast. I have big goals in the sport, but I'm not really a standout runner. I know you were a walk-on, so do you have any advice for a runner that wants to get better?" Yeah, I love this question because I think the coolest thing to me about running is that you don't know what your ceiling is. I think a lot of us assume that we are slower runners than we are. I think I see a lot of runners struggle with their confidence on the start line and in training. We second guess ourselves a lot and we say, oh my gosh, I can't keep up with them. They're running way faster. They're way faster than me. Why would I be running near them in a race or in a workout? And I think that was a big adjustment that I worked on making throughout my career, was focusing on myself and not comparing myself to others. So even though this person says, oh, I'm not a standout runner, well, that's compared to other runners, right? And again, that's not a good marker of who you are and what your abilities are. That's just kind of like compared to people around you. And people excel at the sport at very different rates. You know, like I said, if you're going to use that term, I wasn't a standout runner in high school, but I became a standout runner in college. And so if you have this mindset like, oh, I'm not a standout runner, then you never will be a standout runner, because that's what it takes to become a standout runner, is believing that you can be. So as scary as it can be sometimes, just not being afraid to dream big and believe in yourself that you can get there. I think the other thing that was really helpful for me, so when I was in college and I walked on, I was objectively the slowest one on the team. Like, there's no way to sugarcoat that. I was so far behind everyone on every workout. My long runs, I was doing them by myself pretty much every day. I just was on my own. So again, if I had used runners around me as a benchmark of my progress, I would have been very frustrated from the beginning and maybe wouldn't have stuck with the sport at all. But what I learned to do, and obviously this doesn't come naturally to a lot of us, it didn't come naturally to me, so this is just something to be aware of if you notice this in yourself. Instead of saying, oh, I'm so far behind, oh, I don't like being in the back, oh, this is stressful, everyone's faster than me, try to focus on yourself. What can you do to have a better long run this week than you did last week? And I'll never forget, like, when I started doing long runs at CU, most of the girls on the team were running between, I don't know, 13 and 16 or 17 miles. They would be averaging like 6:30 pace. So CU does really hard long runs, or they did when I was there. And I had never run that long or that fast. So I remember my long runs were like 8 miles at 8:10 pace. Like, I was pretty far behind everybody. But I'll never forget the first long run that I broke 8 minutes. I averaged under 8 minute pace. I was so excited. And if you had asked anyone else on the team, if they would be excited about a sub 8 minute long run, they would be like, that's a terrible long run. What are you talking about? But for me, that was a huge, huge improvement. So I started trying to look for the small wins like that. Am I running long runs a little bit faster each week, feeling better? In interval training, like when we would be doing intervals on the track, if I would be starting with a group or behind a group, I would say, okay, can I keep my gap between myself and the next group the same distance? Or can I try to make it smaller each time or not let it get bigger? So really just shifting your focus on to yourself and things that you can control, because you can't control what runners around you are doing, and focusing on them does not help you get better. Someone else's training does not determine your fitness. Someone else's fitness does not determine your readiness for a race. Only your fitness, only your dedication determines your potential. And I think it's really hard in this sport where there is so much comparison to remember that. And then I think along those lines, the last thing I'll say is don't count yourself out. In high school, I remember I would look at my heat for like the 800 or the mile or whatever, and I would look up every single other girl's on the start line PR. I would look up their PR on Milesplit and see where my PR compared to theirs, and basically decided where I was going to finish in the race before it even started. I remember there were a couple girls that had these really fast PRs, and the race goes out and I can still see them. And I would be like, oh my gosh, I'm not as fast as them. I need to slow down. But the reality is, if I had probably just pushed myself and tried to compete and just saw each person as another runner, not as a specific time, chances are I would have run a lot faster. And I found that in college when I was racing against a lot of those same girls that I competed against in high school, I was beating them in races. And I wasn't thinking about it in those terms when I got to the start line. So instead of, again, thinking about like what everyone around you has done, just remember that a lot of times PRs happen when everything comes together. And the longer you're in the sport, the more rare PRs are, because the more experienced you get, the harder it is to shave time off, right? Like the first 5K you ever run, you have no idea what you're doing. So of course, the next time you run it, it's going to be faster. But the more experienced you get, the harder it is to PR. So just remembering too that looking at somebody's best time they've ever run isn't necessarily a reflection of where they are that day on the start line, or, you know, a lot of times it's just like they had a great day that one race. So why can't that be you today? Why can't this be the day that you PR? So just trying to separate your confidence, your self-worth, your performance from those around you, and really trying to take comparison out. That was what really helped me the most in the sport. Because again, since I was one of the slower runners, if I had just based my success on people around me, I don't know how long I would have stayed in the sport. And if you had asked me in high school or in college if I'd be running a 15, 19, 5K and competing in the Olympic trials, I would have laughed in your face. But I did that. And that's something I never would have guessed I could do. So don't count yourself out. Don't underestimate what your potential is in the sport. I think a lot of us, you know, underachieve because there is a lot of fear, and it's hard to put yourself out there and go for it in practice or on the start line. But yeah, I think just have some confidence, work on focusing on yourself instead of those around you. Those are the ways that you can get better, and just be consistent. Just show up, you know, even if you're not feeling great, even if your workout doesn't go well, it doesn't have to be a terrible workout or a great workout. There can be in between. There can be okay workouts. And sometimes getting through a workout when you physically don't feel good is great practice for a race when you might not feel good. So you're going to gain something from every workout. Don't put so much pressure on every single runner workout. Remember that it's not always going to be perfect, but you're always going to gain something from the day. Keep showing up, be consistent, and stop the comparison. Those are the ways that I found I was able to improve. Okay, this next question comes from Katie. Katie says, "Hi, Maddie. Thanks for sharing all your insights on your podcast. I finally got a medication that allows me to run and train after being diagnosed with Crohn's disease. I've also been strength training and feel like my old self. I realized that I was significantly underfueling in college and in high school. I didn't know what or that anything was wrong with me, so I just would barely eat on race days and long run days. Unsurprisingly, I was always better in workouts than meets and would be fully burnt out by conference. I want running to be fun and sustainable, so I have started experimenting with different gels and running fuels like Tailwind, UCAN, Morton, etc. I immediately feel the benefit of the sugar-based fuel types, but I've read that these can cause gut issues. I don't want to damage my already damaged gut, but I want to make sure I'm properly fueling. Are there types of fuels I should avoid? Does L-glutamine actually help with this? Great question, Katie. So first of all, I'm so happy to hear that you were able to find a medication to help manage your Crohn's disease. I know that can be really challenging with runners. If you haven't seen this already, there's another professional runner, Grayson Murphy, who was recently diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and she has documented her journey with Crohn's and being diagnosed and kind of managing symptoms on her blog. So if you are looking just for some support or some community, highly recommend checking that out. Her Instagram is Race and Grayson. I'm not sure what her website is, but probably similar. So yeah, check that out if you're wanting just to hear experience from another runner who's gone through something similar. But I would say, you know, that said, I love that you're thinking about adding in fuel during runs. I think when an athlete has been under fueling or struggling with energy, this is always an area that I encourage athletes to explore. The main benefit to adding in fuel during runs is preventing yourself from getting into a big deficit, which can really impact that overall daily energy balance and long-term affect your risk for things like low energy availability and REDS. So adding in fuel during runs is always something I'm encouraging athletes to do if your runs are 75 minutes or longer. That includes easy runs. I will say that too. For a lot of my high mileage runners out there, an easy run could be 10 miles and you're out there for over 75 minutes. And even though it's classified as an easy run, you're depleting yourself pretty significantly. And then if you think about it the next day, usually you have a quality session. So you want to make sure you're recovered and ready to go. So if anything, most runners, when they add fuel in during long runs, they notice that they feel like they recover faster. They may not feel a difference during the run itself, but typically feeling better as a whole, adding in that fuel. It sounds like, Katie, for you, you noticed an immediate benefit. So you did feel better from adding in those gels, which is great. And I had the same experience. Adding in gels significantly improved my long runs. If anything, from an enjoyment standpoint, I was able to enjoy my long runs way more when I added in fuel. So your question about the sugar-based fuel types, reading that those can cause gut issues. Any fuel during a run, whether it has sugar or not, has the potential to cause gut issues. So I just want to start by kind of explaining what's happening when you do have gut issues on a run. So whenever we start running, we get what's called gut ischemia, meaning that we no longer have blood flow to our GI tract. And it's not like a complete cutoff, but it's a big reduction. So we have way less blood flow to our GI tract because our body is trying to send blood to our heart, to our lungs, to our working muscles. It's not prioritizing digestion at that point. So there's two things I want to mention with that. One is if you're waiting to fuel until you feel hungry on a run, it is too late. You physically should not be able to feel hunger on a run because we have that blood flow moving away from the GI tract. So we typically don't have hunger signals unless it is extreme. So that's one thing to remember too with fueling is don't wait till you're hungry. The second thing is with gut issues, because we don't have as much blood flow in the GI tract, our digestion is compromised, meaning we typically can't tolerate a ton of fuel at once because we're not able to move it as well. So with sugar-based fuels, what we would see is something called dumping syndrome. So where you put a bunch of sugar, one type of sugar in the GI tract like glucose, what tends to happen is we only have a certain amount of glucose transporters in our GI tract. So once those are saturated, once we've absorbed as much as we can, the rest of the sugar sits in the GI tract undigested. And that throws off the what's called osmolarity or the balance within the intestines. And our body doesn't like that. So it's going to try to dilute that sugar that's sitting in the GI tract. So what will happen is water will start to rush into the intestines. And that's what causes GI issues during runs. So diarrhea or feeling like you have to stop for the bathroom. That's what's going on when you have GI issues. So there's a couple ways that you can prevent this. One is by incorporating fuels that have different types of sugar, which actually is what most gels do these days. That was something that I would say is like a technology that most gels use. Most have a combination of glucose and fructose within the gel. So we also have fructose transporters in our GI tract. So if we have part glucose, part fructose. The idea behind it is we're not going to oversaturate those transporters, so we're going to be able to digest and absorb all the fuel, so none of that fuel will be left sitting in the gut causing gut issues. So that's the first thing I would say is sugar-based fuels, that's not a bad thing. That's actually the type of fuel that we want during training. We just want to make sure that we're using the right amount and the right types for us. And that's going to be different from person to person. So women typically have less of an ability to digest and absorb fructose. So I wouldn't usually recommend a high fructose gel to a female runner, especially if we have a history of GI issues, whereas male runners might be able to tolerate that better. So just keeping in mind that a sugar-based gel is not inherently a bad thing, and that's what we want. We want simple, quick sugar that's going to give us fuel. If we spike our blood sugar during a run, that is what our body will use for fuel instead of breaking down muscle glycogen or our carbohydrate stores in our muscle and using those for fuel, which is what leaves us feeling depleted and typically sore after a run. So adding in that fuel during a run can spare muscle glycogen, and sugar is really what our body wants. The other thing that can help prevent GI issues from happening with that sugar intake is making sure that you're hydrating and that you're getting electrolytes. Most gels require fluid to be absorbed unless they're what's called an isotonic gel, meaning the concentration of the gel more similarly matches the concentration in your GI tract. So Morton is an example of an isotonic gel. You don't have to take that one with fluids. Another one would be like Science and Sport, SIS, some of the precision fuel products, things like Goo, Honey Stinger, Huma. Those are gels that usually require fluids to take with them. So if you're taking a gel like that, you may want to consider making sure you have fluids with you when you take the gel. And then electrolytes can also help. So in the GI tract, I mentioned those glucose transporters. They're actually sodium glucose transporters. So we also need sodium to be able to absorb that glucose. So adding in some electrolytes when you're running and taking in fuel can better help you tolerate fuel during your runs. Not to mention, a really big cause of GI issues during runs is overheating and a high core temperature. And adding more electrolytes and sodium can help keep your body from overheating or slow down the rate of the core temperature rise, which also helps reduce your risk for GI issues. So all that to say, sugar-based gels are not a bad thing inherently, and they are not what's going to cause the gut issues automatically. The gut issues are caused by taking too much too quickly without fluids, without sodium. And that's another reason why practicing your fueling strategy well before your race is so important. We only have a certain amount of glucose transporters at a time, but we can train our gut, we can add more glucose transporters, just like we would train our body to tolerate more mileage. We can train our gut to tolerate more carbohydrates during a run. But we have to start slow. So if you've never taken a gel before, I would have you start with one gel at halfway and do that for a couple of weeks. Then I would have you take two gels. So if your run is 2 hours, I would have you take a gel at 45 minutes and again at an hour 30. And then kind of working your way up to getting to around 40 to 60 grams of carbs per hour. So typically that's 2 to 3 gels per hour. Professional marathoners typically are getting between 80 and 100 grams of carbs per hour. So they're taking a gel usually every 10 to 15 minutes. So it's pretty intense, but it is something that really helps with performance. So that's another benefit to practicing. And if you are having GI issues from taking in fuel, it could just be that your gut's not ready for that. So backing off a little bit, adding in more hydration, trying different fuel sources, those are all things that are going to help. But those aren't necessarily something that's going to like damage your gut. It's just a matter of being smart with your fuel and how much you're adding in. The last part of your question asked about L-glutamine. So L-glutamine is an amino acid that has been shown to improve what's called the integrity of the gut. So it actually helps if there's any damage to the gut lining, it can fuel and feed the gut mucosa to help them repair. So if you're somebody who's experiencing a lot of GI issues, if you have, you know, an autoimmune disease like Crohn's, for example, as always, I'm not going to recommend a supplement for everybody. Check with your doctor, check with your care team, make sure that it's safe for you. But that is certainly an option of something that you can add in, maybe post-run. I wouldn't necessarily have it during your run, but you could have it, like, if you're making a post-run smoothie, you could put the L-glutamine in there. It does have a funky taste, and so I would assume it would probably ruin your smoothie if you did that, but you could put it in, like, a little bit of juice and chug it or something. But just having that daily is certainly something that could potentially help mitigate some gut damage. So those are my suggestions for avoiding GI issues and gut damage fueling during your runs. But yeah, great question, Katie. Okay, the last question that I'll read today says, I've noticed that my appetite has been a lot lower in the last few weeks. I haven't felt as hungry after runs, and I've been really struggling to eat during the day. What could be causing this? Do you have any suggestions on how to continue to fuel even if I don't feel like eating? Super great and timely question. My guess is that's because things have been getting hotter over the last few weeks. So heat is a huge factor in when it comes to appetite suppression. Typically, when we're overheated or just we're hot all the time, our appetite hormones are lower. So we just don't feel as hungry. Part of this is because our core temperature, like I mentioned in the last one, our core temperature is typically a little bit higher, which can disrupt some of the signaling that tells us that we need food or are hungry. So usually that's part of the problem. A couple of ways that you can combat this. One is by hydrating more. So keeping in mind, now we're in the summer, we're sweating more, it's hotter on our runs. We need more fluid to replace what we're losing during our runs. For most runners in the summertime, I recommend no less than 100 ounces of fluid. And that's going to vary from person to person, but that's kind of a good goal to aim for. I also recommend trying to get between 1 and 2,000 milligrams of sodium daily from electrolytes. So if you're someone who uses Element, that's 1 to 2 servings of Element daily. Liquid IV, that's 2 to 4 servings of Liquid IV daily. You know, just kind of being mindful of your electrolyte intake. You're going to need more in the summer. And that's really going to help with heat tolerance and typically help bring appetite back. The other thing that you can try is incorporating more like cold foods. So like I mentioned earlier, smoothies can be great in the summer when you're not feeling as hungry. For two reasons. One, it's easier to get down liquids when you're not as hungry, but two, it can actually help lower your core temperature because it's a cold liquid. So, you know, with meals, having a cold option to drink can help you get a little bit more in, or using cold liquids as a way to supplement your food. So like juice, for example, is a great way to get more carbs if you're having a really hard time eating carbs in the summer when it's hotter. Using cold options like, you know, chicken salad on bread or wraps or sandwiches, yogurt bowls with granola and berries and nut butter, things where you're not having to turn on the stove or heat something up can also be more appealing. So colder options, liquid options. And then like I said earlier in the first question, if you're struggling with your appetite and you're just not feeling hungry or you're not feeling like food is sounding good, then you can also try to have smaller, more frequent meals throughout the day. So having less to eat in one sitting, but eating more often, having like 5 small meals instead of 3 big meals and small snacks. So those are usually the things that help the most: hydration, adding more electrolytes, turning to cold foods, and trying to spread food out more throughout the day can really help. Again, you can kind of try some of the strategies I mentioned earlier if you're not feeling hungry. Adding in more calorie-dense foods like whole fat dairy, more nut butter, avocado, juice with meals, liquid calories, you know, things like that can also be really helpful. But just doing the best that you can and trying to find things that sound good. Honestly, for me in the summer, like pastries are a really big staple with my breakfast, or like a banana bread or something. Like whenever I feel like my appetite is low, things like that always sound good to me. And I'm just really trying to get in carbs and make sure I'm staying on top of my fueling. So maybe I'll add orange juice with breakfast if I'm having a hard time like eating a bigger amount of carbs, and then kind of stay on top of my, you know, protein and add some carbs that are more fun. But just doing the best that you can, spreading things out if that helps, but still being mindful of not going more than 3 to 4 hours without eating. Yeah, those are some of the strategies that you can use in the summer. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to submit a question to be answered on air, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Next week's episode will be an interview with professional runner Steph Bruce. Be sure to tune in if you're interested in hearing her story. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.